Welcome to Ministries That Podcast, where I talk to successful ministry leaders about how they're using podcasting to amplify their mission and grow their ministry so you can too. I'm Tim Hall, your host and owner of Sonomorphic, a podcast production company that specializes in podcasting for ministries. My guest today is Phil Snyder, host of The Living Room Disciple. Phil and I are going to talk about the idea he shared with his friend that developed into the podcast, the transition from the podcast being a side hustle to his full-time work, and why he's decided to change the format and focus on long-form video. So let's get right to it. Here's my conversation with Phil Snyder. Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Tim, it is really good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I first came across your podcast as I was doing some research and trying to figure out, okay, who are other guests that I should have on the show? And my wife was helping me a little bit with that. We DM'd your account on Instagram and connected with Eric Church, who I worked with at Ramsey. Didn't actually work with him, but I knew of him and found out that we both went to the same church when we lived in Nashville there.
Super small world.
Yeah, real small world. And so I'm glad to have you on today to chat through your podcasting journey and some of the changes that you're making as well. We'll get into that. That'll be a lot of fun. But for a little context, the description for The Living Room Disciple reads this way. So The Living Room Disciple podcast, where discipleship finds a home. Our heart for you is quite simple. We want to see you formed into the image of Christ. Whether we acknowledge it or not, everything we encounter is forming us. In this weekly podcast, we are taking a look at our world and our lives as we ask the question, how is this forming us? So join us weekly in our journey toward Jesus. All right, so let's go back to the beginning, Phil. As you're thinking about starting a podcast, I heard in one of the, I think maybe a recent episode, that you had mentioned that you had had a conversation with your friend Eric Church, who works on the podcast, and we were just talking about him. But I'd love to know a little bit about that initial conversation. What brought that up, and what was that like?
Yeah, so we got to go back to like 2022, and I was near the end of the year, and I'd been given an opportunity through Patheos to like start a blog. I've done a lot of writing, and they reached out. And in the midst of working on that, we kind of came up with the Living Room Disciple branding. But I'm not much of a blog reader. And so although I appreciated the opportunity to write a blog, and I did work on that for a little while, I really felt like there was more that should be happening for me in conversations around spiritual formation. I don't know, like I came to know the Lord when I was 18, and like I spent a decade like floundering really hard, you know? It took me, I think, a decade before I learned what like spiritual disciplines were, which is, for me, I just felt like it didn't make a lot of sense. It feels like that's kind of like Christianity 101. So I was just thinking about different mediums and modes to take the same topics I was writing about on the blog and kind of move them into a conversation, and as well like with interviews of people that I respected. And I think a little bit of using a podcast as like an excuse to meet people that I really looked up to and was reading. So me and Eric go way back to like college, and we had just reconnected on LinkedIn not long before that. And we were just like kind of doing weekly calls and catching up. And I just pitched this idea of like a podcast that has this question at the focus. And the question actually comes from a book written by Caitlin Schess, The Liturgy of Politics. And in, I don't remember what chapter, but it's not the focus of the book, but in a chapter, she kind of really flushes out the idea that we are consistently being formed by the liturgies of our life, even if we don't know it. And so those are things like what news sources we're reading, what shows we're watching, what music we're listening to. And she just kind of like fleshed that out in a really helpful way for me. And so I kind of told Eric I wanted to take a whole podcast and start exploring a bunch of different topics and kind of come to some practical answers, I guess, about what this is supposed to look like in the Christian life. And he said the thing that a good friend will say, that's a good idea. You should do that. A great friend will say, I'll do that with you. And so he, that's what he said. He said, I'll do that with you. He said, I'll handle all your marketing and distro, but I don't want to be on a mic. And I said, that's great. And so I ended up, we kind of worked through a few different people that potentially could have been co-hosts and it didn't work out. And then I thought about Nick O'Brien, who is the person who put Caitlin Chess's book in my hand. And I reached out to him, and him and his wife prayed about it. And yeah, we began that journey. I feel like the first episode dropped like March of 2023 or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too long between like conception, it was probably November, December of 2022, and dropping our first episode, which was pretty cool.
Nice. So what took place over those months? You know, you had the idea, you're launching in March, you have the holidays kind of in between there. What did that kind of look like for you?
One of the things that's been really core to the culture at the Living Room Disciple, and one of the reasons that I think we're changing directions, which I know we'll talk about a little bit, is really ensuring that the work that we do in the Living Room Disciple does not feel like a burden. There's a bad habit in the church of taking ministry and like guilting people into essentially having a second job. And it can be really difficult and damaging. So we put a lot of stuff in place to kind of make sure that our pacing is pretty chill. But a lot of things just flowed easier than we thought. So we did a few test runs. We found the Riverside platform, subscribed. The Riverside really does make it. It makes it simple to produce a fairly low budget, you know, podcast. It really does.
Yeah.
And then early on in the process, when we knew that this is the direction we were going, we were praying about one more team member to handle production. So, and this is where the Lord has blessed me so much. So we early on had a team of four people and nobody got paid anything. And so why four humans decided to like volunteer for this, like, I don't know, startup podcast that at first was like, I don't know, the only people who were listening were like our parents or something. I don't know. Like, you know.
But
Anissa Live came on to do production for us. And it was really just sound design. We had video at first too, but YouTube really wasn't doing much. And it was, you know, mostly like growth on Spotify and mostly just kind of a base level of like sound editing. We put some pretty strict rules on like the amount of time that people should be investing. So it meant that our production quality was never going to sound amazing, but it also meant that people were more inclined to hang out for the long haul and the podcast would be a blessing to them versus feeling like the bane of your existence. You know what I mean? Because we've all had that. Like you're working at church or you're working for like a ministry volunteering time, and what started as a blessing out of an overflow of your heart becomes like a burden. And there's lots of reasons for that. But one of them is kind of a disrespect from the leadership about where that ministry falls in priority of each person's life. So I think we kind of kept that priority pretty well grounded, but it just clicked like it between Riverside. And then it wasn't Spotify for podcasters at the time.
Anchor.
It was Anchor. Yeah. And so between Anchor and Riverside, it made the, I didn't do the work. So I'm really bad actually. So Eric, when you listen to this, Anissa, forgive me, but it seemed really easy from my perspective.
So what were some obstacles that you found yourself facing as you were getting going and trying to figure out, you know, you said you did some dry runs of the podcast. What are some of those things that you had to smooth out a little bit or you've discovered along the way?
So I have always struggled with treating a ministry like a product. And there's a lot to be said about identifying like who's your main consumer, who's the target audience you want, you know, that kind of thing. And we made attempts, but it really is on me. I never pursued that, you know, as kind of like the leader of the podcast, that was really on me to push that a little more. And for me, I just wanted to do what felt good. Talk to the people I wanted to talk to, talk about the topics I wanted to talk about. And so there was a lot of, I don't know, things that kind of felt sporadic. I don't feel like there was a lot of thoughtfulness put into, there's a lot of hard work put into things like our logo and like our music and all this kind of stuff. It was so great. And many people pitched in and I have no regrets in a sense. Like it was just the Lord was providing. But if I could go back in time, I probably would have been slower to launching a podcast and quicker to identifying a lot of those, like, what do we really want this to say as far as like our branding to be, and not have a perspective of like, I'm trying to manipulate people with marketing strategies, which is like, I think my feelings generally. but more saying like, I want to produce a show that has a clear audience and people can clearly understand if like this is something that they're going to get benefit from. And so you would notice that like we have certain episodes that just do really, really well. And then like other episodes that just have like, I don't know, 30 views, you know, and it's just this, we didn't really keep people consistently coming back because there wasn't this consistent, this is who the Living Room Disciple is. I think my team might answer that a little bit different. So I think I would have probably done a better job with that, a lot more preparation on my part, which, you know, I told you before we started recording, I'm a fly by the seat of my pants kind of guy, which can be fine in certain environments. But when you're trying to support a team of people who love you enough to do a cool thing with you, it's not the most respectful.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's definitely some value in doing that prep work and trying to figure out some of that stuff you're talking about and trying to come into a podcast and knowing those things. And then there's also that value of just getting started and adapting along the way. It's kind of that balance that's hard and it's tricky to know when you have enough to get started and then you'll tweak along the way.
We're developing some values that are going to help see us through to the next stage. And one of our working title for the value is responsibility, but not obsession. Where, you know, we want to be really responsible. We want to set good deadlines. We want to make good decisions. We want to be thoughtful, but we're not going to get obsessed over the details or obsessed about meeting every deadline. Sometimes people get sick and things need to change you know, that kind of thing. And so I think at some point by accident, we weren't responsible enough up front, 100% on me, you know, with some of that pre-planning. And then we kind of, near the end, got really obsessed about still hitting I got a little obsessed about hitting that Monday, you know, just getting it out every Monday. And that kind of plays a little bit into where we're going and why we're going there. So,
yeah. So let's go ahead and jump there since we've talked about it a little bit. So if somebody listens to the latest episode of the podcast, they'll hear that you're changing the direction of the show and going to start focusing more on long form curated video content. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So if you're thinking stylistically, think like a Vox documentary, Huge If True, Answers in Progress. Like I would say those are like the YouTube videos that are really inspiring the direction. But the vision is still focused on spiritual formation, but moving away from exclusively asking the question, how is this forming us? And more towards answering the what, why, how of practical spiritual formation. So I think there's a lot of really good content online. I feel like there's nothing new to say anymore. So it's almost like, why do you keep bothering? But I feel like there's a gap. So I'm going to have a little bit of a confession time. My team knows this. I'm not a huge podcast listener. Okay. So I have like one podcast I listen to, and it's the Bible Project podcast, and it's because I'm super nerdy about the Bible, and that's it. And so I'm trying to make content that I don't listen to. It's like when I was trying to write a blog, and I don't read blogs, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what I spend a lot of time watching? I really like those informational, you know, like Huge If True did a like 20 minutes on like what is happening at CERN and the Hadron Collider. And it fascinated me and I hung out for the full 20 minutes of the video. And what was cool is it gave me a perspective of hope for certain elements of the future. But what it didn't do is give me anything practical to walk away with. And this is pretty norm with a lot of that kind of content. And I was like, man, I want content like that, that's engaging, that's fast, that's high production value, but answers questions that I feel like Christians are asking. And I feel like they're questions that get answered on YouTube with like a guy lecturing at a camera for like an hour. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not dissing that. I'm just saying that's just not the content I watch, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's probably a market out there like me. This is not going to do it. You know, I have friends and loved ones who will send me like a 2-hour like conversation from somebody about some spiritual topic. And I'm like, I'm not going to watch. That's almost a Lord of the Rings movie. Like I'm just not going to watch it, you know? So this like longer form, I say longer form, I guess that's like a really squishy word. I kind of consider anything over 10 minutes on YouTube like longer form, but scripted, curated, high production value. So instead of, you know, me in front of like a camera doing a podcast, setting up a set and working on a script with a multitude of people, making sure it's fact-checked, including sources. And we'll talk about a question. Our first video, for example, is really going to try to attack the question, can you become more like Jesus by curating the right YouTube playlist? We'll probably have a catchier name than that. But like, you know, like we, can you like get on YouTube, watch enough Bible Project and like, you know, or watch enough like Tim Keller sermon archives and like come out the other end more like Jesus, which I feel like we kind of try to do a lot, or like listen to enough Elevation Worship, or what's the connection between the TikTok content, the YouTube content that we are listening to and watching, and whether or not we become more like Christ, which if I'm really honest, is just a guise to start attacking the connection between orthodoxy and orthopraxy. So I'm just using that as like, hopefully some form of hooking question to start talking about orthodoxy, which is learning what is right or orthodox, and then doing what is right. And there's not a direct connection, but there is an indirect connection, and it's still based upon human choice. But so we'll talk about that. We'll explain that. And then the end of the video will be one to three things that you can go do right after watching this video to get you closer to being more like Jesus. If you want to, it's a choice. It's on you. It's not on me. And for me, I just think that's really helpful because like I'll watch really good content, even Christian content that'll help me, but it doesn't end with like a call to action. Unless the call to action is like subscribe to my channel. But I want like a call to action that has something to do with me getting off of my phone and becoming more like Jesus. So, but it also means that we're going to be getting away from the weekly grind. We're making a commitment to making high production videos and seeing how long they take. And it means that at first they're going to go slow. And that's how it's going to be for a minute. But we are going to partner them with our, with, we're still going to do podcasts. And so what that's going to look like is, for example, in that first video built into the script, hopefully by God's grace, an interview with John Collins over the Bible Project, where I want to ask him, like, have you seen a connection between, actually I want Nick O'Brien to do the interview, which I haven't told him yet. So maybe he's going to listen to this and find out. So heads up, Nick. But I want to ask him, like, have you at the Bible Project seen a connection between people watching your videos and, you know, choosing to act in a different way? And, you know, in the video, probably like 15, 30 second clips of that interview, right? But post launch of that video on YouTube, we would then launch the full interview the following week with John Collins, both on YouTube and on a podcast. So still kind of keeping the podcast there, but it's to support like deeper dives into the shorter form YouTube content.
Gotcha. So you'll do the research, put together the YouTube video that, what's the target length on that, would you say, at this point? Or is it still kind of getting figured out?
Well, we're aiming for 20 minutes is the goal, but we've got our first draft of a script. It's at that 20 minute mark.
Nice.
Depends on if we get the interview we're hoping for.
Yeah.
And then what kind of comes out of that interview. But I think we're always going to be in that like 20 to 30 kind of minute mark, because I feel like that's a sweet spot for a lot of people in their life. And then our target audience really is late 20s to late 30s millennial Christians who have a similar upbringing of Protestantism that didn't wrestle with spiritual formation. And so these are a lot of people who have really busy lives and have kids, and they need something that's enjoyable enough that they can sit down at the end of a day and like scratch a curiosity itch, but also something that will hang out in their brains throughout the night and lead to some action in the following days.
Nice. Yeah. So, and then the podcast will take some, is, are you using some of that long form interview that you're putting on the podcast as, and that's part of the video episode? Is that what you're saying?
Gotcha. Yeah. So like, imagine like we do like an interview with John Collins, because I'm speaking into existence here. I'm just speaking it. We haven't even reached out yet. But yeah, like we, you know, let's say we do a 45 minute hour long interview, which is our norm, like bread and butter, then we would cut that up to hit some key points that kind of move into the script that's still authentic, obviously, to what he's saying and has that level of integrity. And then we would, you know, as that little section of the interview ends, we would say like, you know, it would be a call to action, subscribe below to get the full interview next week. And then next week we would drop the full interview with, and that would go, you know, for everything. So some of the tougher topics, yeah. I'm hoping to get two or three interviews, especially sure. if we have contentious issues, and then kind of same thing.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I've had John on this show, as you may have seen. I talked with him and their producer at the time, Dan Gummel. And mm-hmm. so I'd love to connect you. Can't guarantee anything, obviously. But yeah, I love that idea and running with it. And so I'd love to hear too, as you've decided to make this change, what feedback have you gotten from your audience on the change in direction?
So this is one of the things that I wish I would have done better. We don't have infrastructure to really capture feedback from our audience. And so I can't say we have any. And again, on me, you know, I feel like we didn't do very well at all. I don't think we did as well as maybe we should have with like audience interaction and stuff. It's also really hard when you're telling people like, I don't want you to give more than, you know, 4 to 5 hours a week to this, you know, side endeavor. You really got to be picky and choosy. And I have no regrets because again, like we're 2 years now and yeah, we've had some people come and go, but Eric and Nick have been the core team and they're still here for the long haul. And I really do think it's partly because there's been no burnout. Mm. And so to do something for 2 years unpaid and not feel like you're burnout is a huge blessing. And so, but we didn't do a good job creating that infrastructure to understand what our audience thinks, to have like a newsletter that people are signing up for and use that newsletter to like solicit feedback or to like set up the analytics really, really well for both our website and, you know, our podcast platform. So, and Eric has done an amazing job. I actually don't want to insinuate that we have nothing like that. Eric has worked hard to take what little time he has and what tools he has, but there's only so much you can do. Mm-hmm. So I can't say we have much in the way of audience feedback. Gotcha. So I'm definitely living on a prayer here.
Yeah. And that's the tricky thing with podcasting is there's, because of the way it's distributed, besides like platforms that you can also put it on, like Spotify has comments now and YouTube, you know, has had comments for the longest time. But yeah, a regular podcast listener, if they're using Apple Podcasts or even some of these third-party apps, you can leave a review, but there's not necessarily a commenting ability. And so I think Spotify's stepping into that, but still it's just not a normal habit necessarily of podcast listeners to leave comments on episodes like it is for YouTube.
It's not. And this is where, you know, again, I take responsibility versus, you know, Eric, who's done so much of our marketing work. Like there's still stuff I could have been doing like in a show and like having hooks to say like, go to the comment section and give us your thoughts on this or whatever. And we did try some stuff. We actually, at the end of the first year, we reached out to like all of our guests who are authors and we just asked and they sent us books, signed books. And we were like really excited. And we did something like, if you leave a review or if you leave a comment, you'll be entered into like a raffle to like win a free book, which I thought was brilliant. It was Eric's idea. Nobody signed up. I was like, I don't understand, you know? And we were like small, you know? And I knew that, but I was like, it's a free book, you know? I don't know. So,
yeah, it's probably one of those things too, where it's like everybody thinks that somebody else is going to get it. I mean, I think that's part of the thing with the internet.
Maybe they perceived our podcast as much larger than it really was.
Well, I feel like that's true with some giveaways too, is just like, oh, I'm too late to come to even submit to that or something, you know, to some extent that's the mindset. But yeah, it is, I feel like it is tricky to try and get people listening on podcasts to say anything about the show, either, you know, leaving reviews and saying something nice that way or connecting.
Well, how many of us like are listening to podcasts while doing something else too?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And so it's like, there's going to be a bunch of people listening to this and they're doing dishes, mowing the lawn, driving to work. I actually don't want you to stop, you know, and leave a comment. So it's just a difficult medium to get that audience. We did also notice too that, and you know, it's tough to know. We ran into a lot of things that like, I feel like I'd heard about, but I almost chucked up like conspiracy theory stuff. Where like, when we use the word giveaway, like the algorithm would like shut down like that kind of post and wouldn't get like any traction, which is weird. Or we actually did an interview with Caitlin Schess one time and she used like an analogy that like kind of insinuated war and it got like reported and like taken off YouTube and we had to go through like a whole thing. It was so weird. It was just like, you know, so there's a lot of stuff like that that they kind of learned too, that like we didn't understand how to operate inside of a you know, a social media YouTube space? Like, what are like the unsaid rules that are kind of governing things, which I'm sure, like, you know, Eric does a lot of research into that. And so he was a little more knowledgeable, but you still get surprised, you know, it doesn't matter how many books or articles or videos you watch, things change so fast. So
yeah, for sure. Are you a ministry leader who is currently editing your own podcast? As I've said in previous episodes, editing can be a great exercise to know how you're coming across to your audience, but it can be time-consuming and tedious. If you're ready to be done editing, let's connect. I'm the host of this podcast, but I'm also the owner of Sonomorphic, a podcast production company that specializes in podcasting for ministries. And we have the privilege of working with ministries like She Reads Truth, Michael Easley in Context, and Focus on the Family to help them create engaging podcasts to encourage their listeners as they follow Jesus. If you want to focus on producing your podcast and hand off the editing to a podcast production company that specializes in podcasting for ministries, go to sonomorphic.com and click on Book a Call. That's sonimorphic.com, or just click the link in the show notes. Well, as you look forward to this transition, what are you hoping out of, you know, this first episode? You kind of described it, but the first, I mean, are you going to do like a season of content? Is it just going to be, hey, we're just going to work on the next one, and as soon as we have everything together, we're going to publish it? What is that frequency going to look like?
We're going to keep it to the latter for now, where we kind of just make it and see how long it takes, and then kind of track how long does it take us to make these things, and how much, you know, how much like ROI do we get from one video, you know, between the video, the podcast interviews that come out afterwards, the shorts that we can cut.
Yeah.
You know, like how much traction do you get? How much material do you have in one video? So I'm hopeful that there'll be a lot, you know, that like one 20 minute video plus, you know, all the stuff that's the cutting room floor that you may end up putting in a short. I'm hopeful that that will, you know, give us enough that we can juice that out for a month and a half to some extent.
Sure.
And then write the next one.
But gotcha. We'll yeah. So this podcast, though, is not your full-time job, right? And so the challenge, too, is like you're saying, everybody's volunteering on it. And so how have you've talked about the intentionality of making sure that burnout doesn't happen, and this is a higher production level that you're about to step into. How are you trying to structure your time to make sure that you don't overdo it as you step into this more produced video first kind of format?
Yeah, the Lord decided to answer that, because I was wondering the same thing. So I've been spending the last probably year and a half in my day job learning video editing on a much deeper scale.
Okay.
And I was excited to apply it to this. So I think that was part of it.
Yeah.
But due to recent changes, me, along with many others around the United States, are being affected by RTO. And so a return to office kind of call, and I work for an organization that's in a different state than I live. I won't be moving. So me and my wife had a time of prayer and fasting to figure out, what does this look like? And we're going to be taking the Living Room Disciple full time.
Okay.
So me and my wife are going to be focusing on it full time. The team's still going to stay with me. We have a few actually other people who are coming on to volunteer as well.
Gotcha.
And a few other initiatives that I'm not ready to announce that kind of go with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to be registering as a 501c3 and looking for supporters, and that'll be coming soon. And so you'll probably drop links, but follow us.
Yeah.
We are going to need some early Patreon supporters to make this viable. But yeah, I was definitely wondering. I felt like it was clear when our team was praying that this was the direction we wanted to go, but it also felt like really unattainable. And, you know, with this new life change, suddenly it feels like maybe I could do that production value. I'll have the time.
Gotcha. Yeah, similar thing and how I took my business full time is that we had decided that we were going to move and worked at Ramsey Solutions, and Ramsey doesn't do remote. And so it was a great opportunity, a great alignment and opportunity to take it full time, and all of the risk and anxiety that comes with that too, of like, is this actually going to work? And it's working for the most part. And so I'd love to hear too, as you're processing through this, What do you, you know, as you're looking for supporters and you're mm-hmm. you're doing the nonprofit filing and all of that, what do you anticipate it taking financially to make this show happen?
Well, it's not just the show. So we do have some other initiatives that are really big that we're not ready to kind of announce, but follow us, and they're really exciting and they're coming this summer. But my current aim is to raise about $250,000 this calendar year, both in, you know, just generous believers who can give larger one-time donations, but primarily through a small kind of gathering of hundreds of amazing believers who can give $15, $20 a month. So $250,000 by the end of the calendar year, and also hopeful to have like a revenue between donations, ad sales, and some product sales that, again, are going to be announced soon.
Yeah.
Hopeful about $10,000 a month. And do you call it revenue when it's a nonprofit? I'm not trying to make money, but I guess it's
Yeah, it's
revenue.
Still money coming in. So yeah. Yeah, I guess
it's
it would be.
It's got to pay the bills.
Yeah, right.
Buy my groceries and a team of other people's groceries. So so that's what we are, you know, praying for and aiming towards, you know. We're not at a non-stopper if that's not able to be raised, but I think that's where the Lord's leading us.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Is it? Because it's scary. I'm terrified.
It is scary. It
like,
is.
And even saying that number, Tim, low socioeconomic, or like, I'm like low middle class. Like I kind of grew up, you know, like more than once popcorn and like PB&Js was dinner. And like that was like norm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's nothing bad, but like I remember more than once like pushing my, you know, my parents' minivan down the road because it was like that's just the life I grew up in, you know. And I'm not bothered by that, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blessings that came from that. The idea that I'm saying, you know, I'd like to raise $250,000 is mind blowing, but I genuinely believe we're transitioning our vision. As an organization to something I'm really, really passionate about. And it's all like connected to spiritual formation and, you know, how are you being formed by this and that. But I think over the few years we've been doing the Living Disciple, it's helped me kind of provide a framework that's, I think, more helpful for people. You know, I really think that we can only imagine a future based upon the building blocks that we give our imagination. Right. And so like, give you like a bin of Legos. You can only like imagine like everything in that bin was like browns, greens, and they're all from like Lego plant sets. No matter what you do, you're coming out, unless you work really hard at it, you're probably going to come out with something on the other end that looks like a plant, right? Most people will take the building blocks that they've been given and produce some form of garden. Our imaginations and our lives are very similar to that. We can only imagine a kingdom future if we give our imagination, the building blocks to imagine that kingdom future.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons, and this is not new. This is just Phil's phrasing of it that I think will help some people. But this is why meditating on scripture is so important. This is why, do you remember like back in like the late 80s, early 90s, there was like the whole like a bunch of churches like burning music and movies and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a terrible way of handling things. But at the end of the day, they were getting at this idea of like, again, terrible way of going about it, but they had a good point, right? And they just made a lot of bad conclusions, right? For example, I'll use something that's kind of controversial, but not to me. You know, I remember talks early on that like Grand Theft Auto was not a game you should play, okay? And then like the extreme version of that was like, you know, Grand Theft Auto would like make you a criminal and a murderer. Okay, that's not a healthy conclusion, nor backed in science, But if you're going to sit in a room for 2 to 4 hours a day and you're going to dump into your imagination images associated with, you know, criminal behavior, so on and so forth, you're not necessarily going to come out and go do those things in real life. That's not the point. The point is your imagination will take on those building blocks and the way you think about the future and the decisions that you choose to make in alignment with that future will reflect those building blocks as well. Yeah. You know, like this just, it's like an oversimplifying it would be something like what goes in must come out, you know, like all these kind of like cliche things we heard growing up that I feel like fell on deaf ears. But I think maybe a healthier way to say it is if you want to be able to live like Jesus, if you desire to be able to sit in the Garden of Gethsemane with him and crush the snake, Jesus was in his imagination when he first defeated Satan, right? Like he was imagining it. He was like thinking of the cup to come. He was processing what that was going to be. Nobody had touched his body and he was already sweating blood. He was processing what was to come. He knew what was coming and he made a decision in the garden before anybody had touched his body. He knew what was going to come, what he was going to do, and the future that it would bring for us. And he had victory there first. And then everything else was like a natural byproduct of that. And we want to be people who can in some way, shape, or form live the way Jesus lived, but not have Garden of Gethsemane moments. We want to be able to kind of do whatever the heck we want in our imagination, consume whatever we want in our imagination, live the life that we want to live in our mind, and then expect our hands to heal the sick, feed the poor, live like Jesus, and then hear, well done, good and faithful servant. I just think that we can give our imaginations the building blocks so that we don't even have to like, not that we don't have to try, but like we give our imagination the building blocks and the actions begin to seem like obvious. If you feast your mind on the goodness of feeding the poor, you will walk by someone in need and you won't debate stopping into the closest restaurant, grabbing them food and bringing it. Like you just, for whatever reason, the debate leaves your mind because you've already imagined that moment a number of times and made a decision a number of times. But like if, take fighting with your spouse, for example. Okay, how many of us, our spouse really frustrates it because they're always wrong. We're always right. We get it. And like in our mind, we rehearse the conversation we want to have with them and how we're just going to say that thing and say that thing and it's going to shut them down. And you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The first place we're supposed to have victory is in that moment of imagination where we correct our thoughts and say, no. I do need to rehearse this conversation, but I need to rehearse it in a way that would be in alignment with Jesus. But I can't do that if 24/7 I'm listening to Taylor Swift sing about her own getting vengeance on her lovers. Like it just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I filled my brain with the imagination building blocks of like harming the person that has harmed me. And so it's just, you just can't just flip a switch and become somebody who can act like Jesus if you don't give your imagination. So anyway, sorry, I get a little passionate about it.
No, that's, so that's great.
That's in alignment with what we've been doing, but I think a more mature and refined version of them.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That perspective and that thought process, if you're interested in knowing out about what's coming up on the Living Room Disciple, that's what Phil's thinking about. And I like the way that you're processing through and being very intentional about that in a way that it's easy to overlook, to just kind of gloss over that truth and not base our lives around the things that we should be because they are, like you're saying, the building blocks in which we're thinking, which leads to those actions. So good stuff, man.
Thanks.
What are you most excited about as you look forward to the rest of this year? You're launching, or basically relaunching the show and you're raising funds and you're getting all of this figured out and stuff. What would you hope by the beginning of 2026 is true?
Yeah, three things. The first is I really do pray that we're having a lot of fun making YouTube videos. Like I want it to be fun, you know? And I think that the way we're going to go about this will be more enjoyable and we'll be a little more proud of. I feel like a lot of our podcast episodes are great, but I don't feel like they're things people will listen to in 10 years or 3 years. And I want to make some videos that can be used in a Bible study group 10 years from now. So that's thing one. Thing two is 100% the fact that we're not just going to be producing YouTube videos exclusively. And I can't tell you more yet.
Yeah.
But man, I'm excited to talk about it. But it's more info coming. And then lastly is I'm prayerful that by January of 2026, I won't be the only employee at the Living Room Disciple, but we'll be providing for at least two household incomes. It's just a heart of mine to also be a really beautiful and healthy employer. I think many of us have learned over many years, you know, just how, man, an employer who looks at you and treats you as like a whole person, it just changes so much in your life, you know? I think it's a gift to give someone. Yeah. And I want to start giving that to people. So
that's really cool.
That is the reason. That's the number one reason we need to raise $250,000 is to start a cycle of being able to bring people on, paying a living wage, and taking care of families.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. All right. Well, we're going to transition to the high pass segment where we ignore the lows and I ask you about some of your favorite things.
Just such a cool segment, by the way. Every time I listen to your I just love this segment.
I'm glad to hear that. So this is the feedback I need to hear.
Yeah.
But yeah, so first of which is that I read that you build furniture for fun. And so I wanted to know, what is your favorite piece that you've built so far?
I'm a nostalgic guy. So that couch right there.
Yeah.
It's actually a version two of the second. Okay, so I have a problem as a human. And my problem is like, I'll do a small thing and then I'll say, great, now I can go do like the biggest thing, right? Mm. And so I built a small Murphy desk with Walmart tools because I couldn't afford an actual Murphy desk. Again, low middle class. And realized it was a lot of fun. And I said, we need a couch. I want to build a couch. Literally, like the second thing I built was a couch, which is the dumbest. And it came out awful, but we loved it. And so a few years later, I made a newer version of it. And that's it right there. And so I think that's just always going to be, it's in the backdrop of almost all of our episodes. It's just got a special place in my heart. I dragged it all the way from Florida. Mm. I will continue to drag it around wherever I go. But I would say probably the finest piece of furniture I made, I just recently finished, and it's my workbench.
Nice.
We just moved into a new spot. I have a workshop for the first time in my life and just put together a really nice workbench.
Nice, man. Yeah, that's cool. All right. Well, right now, what is your favorite topic to speak on and teach about?
The sanctified imagination, which is everything I was just talking about. The term baptized imagination, as far as I know, comes from a quote from C.S. Lewis in his book, Surprised by Joy. And I was first exposed to it by a King's Kaleidoscope album under that name. Mm. And it really caught my imagination.
Yeah.
And, but I started thinking quite a bit. I was doing the podcast at the time when the album came out, read that quote, and I started thinking a lot about post the baptism of our imagination. So when our imagination enters into the kingdom, how do we mature it and grow it? Mm. And I've heard some other people use that term, but as far as I can find, there's no book under that name. And nobody please write it because it's on my list of things to do. And it's 100% what I enjoy talking about the most.
Nice. But yeah, I can tell. I can tell. So that's cool.
Yeah, I get a little passionate.
All right. Last question in this segment. What's one of your favorite stories from a listener about how the Living Room Disciple has impacted their life?
So one of the things I've really loved about the podcast is like, we don't chase big names exactly. Not that we've never had big names on our show or anything, but I think one of our first guests was Scott McKnight, which I guess is not a big name for some people, but it's big for me. He's a big scholar. But I love interviewing the people who are like cited in the footnotes, right? Who like, because I just feel like they usually are the ones who actually know what they're talking about. So we interviewed this guy named Wolfgang Simpson. He's a German theologian who's done a lot of thought and work on home churches. And we've just gotten so many comments from like international listeners. And it's just on my mind. I mean, we literally got a note just like 2 weeks ago, just thanking us so much that, you know, it's one of the only interviews with Wolfgang Simpson on the internet. And it was a huge blessing. And that guy is fantastic. And I, you know, he has a book that's, it's a little older now, Houses That Change the World, and I recommend anybody who's thinking about home churches, read it. Hmm. It's probably the most comprehensive thought on home churches that I've read, and it ministered to me quite a bit. But also, he's just a fantastic human who, he did the whole interview, actually. He was in a hotel in India, which is so random.
Okay.
And he put his phone in his shoe.
Okay, yeah.
And he just, you know, and like he did the whole interview like that. And he had some family stuff going on and similar to you before the show. And I was saying I wasn't feeling well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, we can reschedule, all that kind of stuff. And he was like, no. And it was one of the interviews that blessed me the most. And it turns out that many of our listeners feel the same way.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we've gotten a lot of just thankfulness messages. Just thank you for interviewing Wolfgang. And it's been cool. And if any of you are listening to this, you're welcome.
Yeah.
It was a blessing.
Nice. All right. Well, to close our episode, who else do you think would be a great guest for this podcast?
Oh, wow. Oh, no big deal. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, he started a podcast not long ago. He's a Nashville-based hip-hop artist.
Okay.
He goes by Deal, like D-Y-L is kind of what everyone calls him, like for short. But he's got a really, really rad podcast. And it's, I don't know, check out his podcast, see what you think, but no big deal.
Okay, nice.
He's kind of a big deal. Or no big deal, I don't know. But anyways, I've checked out a few of his episodes and I really appreciate him.
Nice, nice. Yeah, well, Phil, thank you so much for taking the time to share your journey and what's coming on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Dude, thank you so much for having me, Tim. Thanks for reaching out and praying blessings over you and your podcast.
Thanks, man. I really enjoyed my conversation with Phil and hearing about how he's growing and adapting the podcast to include video-first content and the transition of the podcast from being a side hustle to now his full-time work. You can listen to The Living Room Disciple with the link in the show notes. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Ministries the Podcast, produced by Sonomorphic. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast and share it with a friend. That's the best way to support this show, and together we'll help more ministries grow and thrive through podcasting. Now come back in 2 weeks to hear my conversation with Jennifer Pepito, author, speaker, founder of The Peaceful Press, and host of Restoration Home with Jennifer Pepito. Jennifer and I are going to talk about how she got involved in podcasting back in 2017, the relationship she's seen between writing and podcasting, and her streamlined workflow for producing the show so she hardly has to touch episodes after recording. Well, until next time, keep encouraging your audience as they follow Jesus.